Well, now, what Shiva Rao do you think the Chinese are going to do now?
Well, that's a very difficult question for me to answer, but I hope that the Chinese will recognize the desirability of starting negotiations. And no one would be more happy than India to see them adopt this line.
But you agree that at the moment there's no sign of relenting in their attitude?
So far, I mean, judging from their utterances, there does not, unfortunately, seem to be any sign of their relenting.
Is that, do you think that the American resolution that was passed at United Nations has had a bad effect on the whole?
Well, certainly, I think that resolution branding China as an aggressor has certainly complicated the situation because branding China as an aggressor and then starting or attempting to start negotiations seem to us to be two incompatible propositions. And I think a good officers group would have had much better chance of success if that resolution had not been adopted.
What's the case for branding China, very briefly, John Fisher? What do you think?
First of all, I would like to agree with Mr. Shiva Rao that having branded communist aggression in India as such makes negotiation more difficult in this one case. If we had not branded China as an aggressor, however, we would have set a precedent which might have been very dangerous in the future and might have caused us infinitely more difficulties in the case of communist aggression, say, in Germany, or a Chinese attack on Indochina. If we had avoided that issue, we would in effect be issuing an invitation to communist imperialists to go ahead and attack wherever they thought they could get away with it. I hope that now that step has been taken and that the Chinese armies have been checked in Korea, that some moderation will come forward in the councils in Peking and that we can actually get to talking about peace. One thing that has puzzled Americans here is the Indian refusal to serve on the Good Offices Committee. We felt that India could be very valuable as a go-between here and don't quite understand why they have refused to serve since they are so eager to see a peaceful settlement.
Why won't the Indians serve on the Good Offices Group?
Well, I hope there is no misunderstanding on that point. It is not withholding our cooperation in any way. But in the first place, as we pointed out at Lake Success, without success, that the adoption of the American resolution branding China as an aggressor rendered the path of the negotiator extremely difficult. But apart from that, it seemed to us that India might be able to play a helpful role in the coming weeks if the Good Offices Group does not succeed. If it succeeds, well, no one would be happier than we are. But it is certainly not with any intention of holding back our cooperation that our government took that step.
Well, now, I wonder if we should start discussing what happens if the Chinese continue to refuse to negotiate with the Good Offices Group. Have we then any alternative to going on fighting in Korea? In your view, Shiva Rao, what then would be the Indian attitude? Is there a point at which their views change?
Well, I think our attitude is going to be to wait on events and see how they shape in the next few weeks or months. We shall hope all the time that there will be restraint on both sides, and we hope too that on reflection the opposition to the admission of China into the United Nations will weaken, and we still are confident that once China comes into the United Nations the whole situation will alter, and I think we are laying great stress on that aspect of the situation.
Well, I don't know that many British people would share that cheerful view, Shiva Rao, but we do agree that we must never despair of the chance of reaching an honourable agreement with the Chinese. John Fisher, you, of course, would like further measures taken in this kind of event, I expect.
No, I would not. I think it would be a mistake for us to attempt to impose any military sanctions on China.
Oh.
I don't think that economic sanctions would be very effective. I, of course, don't feel that any of the peace-loving nations should ship military supplies to China as long as it's engaged in killing members of the United Nations Army. But I think that further sanctions would not be effective on the economic front and that military sanctions would be extremely unwise.
Mr. Fisher, do you think you're speaking there for the majority of American people?
I think so. I don't think anyone in America wants to get bogged down in an endless war on the Asiatic continent. Among other things, would greatly weaken the forces available for the defense of Europe.
Yes, we British are particularly interested in that, of course. Here we are in Europe, and we are very much afraid of getting our limited forces tied up in what we think would be the wrong place, namely Asia rather than Europe, which is still more vital, at the wrong time, which is before the new defense preparations of the United States and ourselves begin to bear fruit, and against the wrong country, that is, against China, rather than against Russia, whom we regard as the principal difficulty in the international situation. And for those reasons, we are in Britain very much opposed indeed to the spreading of the war. I don't think it's a question of blaming China. I think we all realize that China is to blame. I'm not attempting to excuse or defend China's aggression at all. I think it is indefensible. But we have to look beyond questions of blame only, I think, here, and just consider coldly what the actual consequences of the various courses of action we can take. And we in Britain do feel we'd be playing into the Russians' hands by fighting at the wrong place at the wrong time against the wrong country.
I don't think there is any serious difference in view between the points you've mentioned and the points that most Americans would make on the same issue.
But at one time, I believe, there was some talk of sanctions by the United States government. A little pressure on us, I believe, that we should agree to further measures under the Collective Measures Committee. I'm reassured, Mr. Fisher, if you suggest to me that our viewpoint has come together on this a good deal.
I think that you will remember that the American proposal was simply that sanctions should be studied. And we hope that that committee will study them for a long time in a relatively quiet way. There is no inclination here, and so far as I know, never has been, to rush into any programs of sanctions precipitately.
And short of sanctions, Mr. Fisher, you'd agree that unless we have a common policy of sanctions against China, then individual members of United Nations are under no moral obligation at all to cease a legitimate trade with China.
A legitimate trade, yes, but I think there is a moral obligation not to send military supplies, for example, through Hong Kong.
Ah, but now, Mr. Fisher, where's your proof of that? I read a lot of that in the United States papers when I was there 2 weeks ago, and I've made inquiries here. And we have a very, very close ban against military and strategic supplies going through Hong Kong, which we've agreed with you and discussed with you. We have a list of things which may and may not go. You may say that we should extend the list, which doesn't, for example, include rubber. But we have got a list agreed with you of military and strategic supplies, and we stick to our side of the bargain.
That is correct. I wasn't implying that the bargain had not been fulfilled. I am simply arguing that the list should not be suspended.
Yes, I see. Well, I think we all agree on that, Mr. Fisher. That's very reassuring, what you tell me. But now it's time, I think, for us to begin to wind up and state generally our own views. Shiva Rao, I'm afraid I've kept you out of the discussion for a time now. Would you like to make some general comments on the discussion we've had and the position?
Well, Mr. Mayhew, I'm very glad to have been kept out because I realize now how much more we are agreed on the policy to be adopted in regard to China than when we began. We seem to be agreed that we should not, under any circumstances, be dragged into active or prolonged hostilities. And what worries me is this, that in America and to a certain extent even in England, people seem to forget that Asia is not to be divided into communist China and the other countries non-communist. Overriding this is a general Asian sentiment. And I do not think that many countries in Asia, in fact almost all countries in Asia, would like at all to be dragged into any policy of imposing sanctions or of sending troops to fight the Chinese. There is, in the last few years, a strong sentiment sweeping over Asia that at last, after many decades of subjection to foreign colonial powers, we are at last emerging into political freedom. And no Asian country has the slightest intention of accepting any foreign domination, whether it's of the old colonial powers or of any new power. But what we are anxious about is, as I said at the beginning, our grave shortage in food and clothing and the lack of amenities which make life attractive. It is by strengthening our economic and social foundations that we shall fight communism, not by physical force. And I wish the British people, and particularly the people in the United States, would realize that the best way of fighting communism is really to stimulate economic and social progress in all the countries of Asia. And if I may say a word, just at the present moment, having come back from Lake Success only in the last few weeks, I realize how desperate our food situation is. And we are looking particularly to the United States to see what help comes from there. Because if we get the wheat, I think we shall tide over the crisis in the next few months. And that, I feel, will create far more powerful bonds of goodwill between India and the United States and Britain than anything else. And I hope that would be borne in mind, notwithstanding the sharp disagreement that there has been over the manner in which China should be dealt with.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rao. Mr. Fisher, what do you have to say?
The question of sending American wheat to India is occasioning a great deal of debate at the moment in the American press and in the floors of Congress. There are many congressmen who, of course, are reluctant to send any great amount of American assistance to India when it has consistently opposed the United Nations actions in the Far East. I think, however, that that is not likely to be the majority opinion of Congress or of the people in the United States when the debate is finished. And I'm reasonably confident that wheat shipments will be made to India to forestall the impending famine.
Well, thank you, Mr. Fisher. We seem to be ending on a note of greater agreement. I'm afraid we just have only a few seconds left. Would you then just make a few general comments, Mr. Fisher, before I wind up?
Yes. I think that it would be useful for all of us to put more emphasis on our points of common agreement in future discussions in the press of our countries, and not quite as much emphasis as we have on the matters of disagreement. In the long run, I think that we will find ourselves all pretty much in the same boat.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fisher. And I've just time to say myself that the British feel that it's a little bit optimistic, indeed a great deal too optimistic, to think that we can meet this communist threat without being prepared for a resort to physical force if the worst happens. We look at Czechoslovakia and Tibet, and we feel that mere goodwill, mere inoffensiveness, is unfortunately, the world being as it is not enough. But similarly, we feel that an armed force alone won't solve it, and that we must on no account rule out by any hasty or adventurous policies the chance of reaching an honorable settlement with China today. Well, this then ends our London Forum program. We very much appreciate your contribution, Shiva Rao from New Delhi and John Fisher from New York. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.